Have you ever gotten a hunch or made a decision about something that you cannot explain why? On today's edition of Please Explain, we're looking at instinct, intuition, gut feelings, those unconscious reactions that guide so much of our decision making. We're joined by Timothy Wilson, Cheryl J. Aston Professor of Psychology at the University of Virginia and author of Strangers to Ourselves, Discovering the Adaptive Unconscious, published by Belknap Press, part of Harvard Press, and by Gerd Gigerenzer, director of the Max Planck Institute of Human Development in Berlin and author of Gut Feelings, The Intelligence of Unconsciousness, published by Viking. Gentlemen, welcome to our show.
It's a pleasure to be here, Rosie.
Thank you. And once again, for all you listeners, you can call in with your questions at 212-433-9692. Do I have both Gerd and Tim there?
Yes, I'm there. Greetings from Berlin.
Oh, well, thank you. Gerd, I would like to start off with you. Can you explain exactly what a gut feeling is?
A gut feeling is a judgment that is fast. It comes quickly into a person's consciousness. The person doesn't know, however, why they have this feeling. Yet, it is strong enough to make an individual to act on it. What a gut instinct is not is calculation. You do not fully know where it comes from.
Why is it called a gut feeling if it's something that happens in the brain and not the stomach?
It's only called gut feeling in the U.S. and in a few other countries. So it's not in France or in Spanish. The French link it to the heart. The Germans link it to the belly. That's a little bit above the guts. And many countries don't link it to any of these organs. So it has nothing really to do with the guts.
And what does the term heuristics mean?
So we ask the question, what is the process underlying a gut feeling? So that's what the person doesn't know. And in many situations, we can identify the process, and it's a very simple rule that's called a heuristic. That means it's a principle where people pay attention to the most important thing and ignore all the other rest. So it's something that the art of ignoring information and concentrating on the few important pieces of information.
Tim, gut reactions originate in the unconscious. Can you explain what is exactly the unconscious for our listeners?
Sure. Maybe not in 10 words or less. Psychology has really come to a somewhat different understanding of the unconscious than was true, say, years ago with Sigmund Freud. The modern view is more that it is a very useful set of processes we have to quickly size up the world, as Professor Gigerenzer says, in ways that we don't necessarily know that we're doing, but a whole set of processes that allow us to quickly interpret what's going on, to make judgments, to form feelings. And all of this happens outside of awareness and often very quickly.
I want to go back to something that Gerd had stated, that in other countries it's not referred to as a gut feeling, and then you said that in France they say that it originates from the heart. In saying that, in some cultures there's this kind of spiritual quality associated with intuition or gut feeling, a belief that it's a way of telling the future, or just, you know, are these beliefs widespread, and do they have any validity in your research?
No. Those, Professor Wilson and I, are devoting our time to the scientific study of gut feelings. Gut feelings are usually relegated in our society to a second-class status. And one way to relegate them in this way is to associate gut feelings with parapsychology, with the sixth sense, or with God's voice. It's very important to realize that gut feelings are real. We find them in our world, in experts, in business people, in scientists, and they are something that of value, not just something mystic like a sixth sense.
We have a caller here, Gabrielle from Manhattan. Gabrielle, you have a question for the gentleman.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine, and congratulations. You're a perfect host. I really enjoy your show.
Well, thank you.
I'm a firm believer in gut instinct. I believe that my mind and my heart work together. I'm true to myself, and when I don't abide by that, I usually run into a problem with the situation I'm dealing with. When people try outsmart me or play with my heartstrings, and I'm out of control.
Tim, do you want to take this one?
Excuse me?
It sounds like you have good instincts, although I have to say that the I think one of the most difficult things is to decide when to trust those gut feelings and when not to, that particularly in the realm of emotion, when we're trying to gauge our feelings and whether they're true or something whimsical. It can be tricky to know whether these are things we should trust or not. And one thing my research has shown is that it can be dangerous to analyze them too much. So we don't necessarily want to take out that piece of paper and make exhaustive lists of pluses and minuses. That the danger there is that we'll talk ourselves out of a gut feeling that we should be paying attention to.
And Tim,
but a gut instinct is a gut instinct. I find that if I'm in a potentially dangerous situation, that I'll roll around in my sleep at night. It's sort of I do believe in a sixth sense, or like it's a gift. It would be hard to convince someone that doesn't believe in a sixth sense that it works, but I'm a pretty firm believer in it, and I'm really looking forward to listening to the rest of this program.
All right. Well, thank you, Gabriel. Thank you for calling. In saying that, do you think that gut feelings and decision-making, decisions intuitively is criticized in a world that believes in facts and evidence?
It is true that many people still believe that reason is above intuition or gut feelings. On the other hand, I have studied a number of businesses, and when you ask the top decision makers in, for instance, give you one example, an international company with about 50 billion revenues per year, so the top decision makers tell me that about half of the professional important decisions are gut decisions. That is, they know what to do, but they cannot explain it.
And in saying that, how do you study the unconscious if you say that the gut reactions originate from there? Tim, if you want to take that question?
Well, psychologists have developed a variety of techniques to try to gauge what people are thinking. Some of them rely on quick computer responses. Others, various laboratory techniques in which you try to bypass what people say and look at what they do and how they respond, and from that try to infer what their unconscious must be thinking.
And Gerd, you did a study recently, right, about how people pick stocks, and you know, what did the study reveal about how people make those choices?
Yeah, that was a funny study. So we actually have run several ones, and we are looking at a unconscious principle underlying intuition that we call the recognition heuristic. So if you haven't heard of one stock but have heard of another one, so people tend most of the time to buy the one they have heard of. That's the recognition heuristic. A very simple rule that needs semi-ignorant people who haven't heard of everything but also not of nothing. And now you can put this onto test. And in one study, we were looking for semi-ignorant people. These were pedestrians in Chicago and in Munich, and asked them just which of the 500 Standard & Poor's you have ever heard. And then you get a kind of recognition portfolio, and then it can put it to test how it fares compared to the market, randomized picked stocks and other benchmarks. And there are now about a half a dozen studies. And since stock picking is very, very hard to predict, still the studies that we have come up with find that this kind of very simple heuristic, where you need semi-ignorant people as opposed to experts, does as well as highly paid Wall Street experts, and in some cases, even better. At least in one study where I put my own money, I never had an experiment that paid so well.
Hmm. Wow. Tim, you conducted an experiment asking people to choose a favorite poster. Are people more likely to go on instinct when making a decision like that quickly? Can you just explain to the listeners about that experiment?
Sure. And I think the way that this particular area differs a little bit from the kind of studies that Gert has done is, and these are more emotional or subjective decisions, where really what people are trying to do is to predict their future feelings, not the performance of a stock, say. And in this particular study, these were college students who we brought in and we showed them various kinds of art posters. And it was really very simple. In one condition, we simply had them look at them and choose one to take home, and which we gave them. And then a couple of weeks later, we called them up and asked them how satisfied they were with the poster they had taken home. And most people were pretty satisfied. But there was a second group that when they came in, before they chose their poster, we asked them to be very analytical, to take out a piece of paper and write down all the reasons why they liked or disliked each of the posters, and then to choose the poster to take home. And that group, which, by the way, was following the advice that Benjamin Franklin gave years ago about how to make decisions, of being very thoughtful and make these lists of pluses and minuses. But in this case, this group actually did not like their decision of poster, their choice of poster, as much. That it was as if this act of justifying and analyzing their preferences confused them as to what they really liked and led them to choose a poster that they ended up regretting having chosen.
That's so interesting. I'm Rosie Perez, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Timothy Wilson and Gert Gigerenzer on today's Please Explain About Gut Feelings. We have a caller here, Kiki from Red Hook.
Hello.
Hello, Kiki.
You're wonderful on the air, and I wish that you were on all of the time.
Thank you.
And thank you to your guests. They're very helpful. Here's my question. I, for one, really believe in intuition, instinct, and what the Americans call gut feelings. And sometimes to a fault, where people, how could you possibly know, they say, how do you know right away when, if you meet someone, that that's going to be the person you're going to marry, for example? However, my question is it possible that, and you gentlemen probably know a lot more about this than I do, but the percentage of our brain that we actually use to process information that dictates the things that go on physically and chemically in our bodies, would it be possible, perhaps, that these intuitions or feelings that we have are stemming from parts of our brain that we don't know what their functions are?
Well, I think it's certainly true that they come from processes that we don't have access to, that we don't know the basis of these instincts or gut feelings, that they have been computed in some aspect of our brain in ways that we just simply can't observe. And that's what makes them so difficult to explain.
And but Tim, you also did a study on relationships.
Yes, I mean, it was a case, again, this is in an area that's very subjective, where people are talking about romantic feelings, and we were curious, these, again, were college students in committed relationships, and we were curious as to whether we could predict which couples stay together over the next year or so, and we tried to predict that from their simple reports of how things were going in their relationship. But again, and that that simple question predicted pretty well, unless we first asked people to, again, take out a piece of paper and be very analytical to try to put into words why their relationship was going the way it did, seemed to mess up their intuition in a way, that it made them too rational about their feelings. And when they then told us how they felt, those feelings didn't predict the outcome of the relationship at all.
Well, you should have asked me. I've never listened to my gut feelings when it comes to relationships, and I do a great job. Anyway, I'm Rosie Perez, and I'm sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Timothy Wilson and Gerd Gigerenzer on today's Please Explain about gut feelings. I'm sorry, Tim, I cut you off. And by the way, Kiki from Redwood, thank you for your call.
Yeah, Rosie, can I add one thing?
Yes, please do.
About this. There's one thing I feel I have to add, and that is that I don't believe we should always trust our gut feelings, particularly in the areas of say, romance. And I think this is the tricky part of this, is knowing when to trust and when not. So I think most of us would agree that if you've met someone for 5 minutes, probably our intuition is not going to be as good a predictor or as good a guide as to whether we should marry that person than if we've known them for several months. And the trick is to knowing whether this gut feeling is reliable, is it based on good information? And I think the more information it's based on, such as the more time we've spent with a person, then the more trustworthy it is. But I'm a little leery of your listeners having a take-home message that they should always trust their feelings, even if they're based on very little information.
Mm. Gerd, did you want to add something?
Yes, Rosie, if I can follow this up there. Let me give you an example where gut feelings fail.
Okay.
And after 9/11, many Americans stopped traveling in airplanes. And what did they do? Did they stay home or drove with their cars? I've looked at the statistics. What happened is that for 12 months, Americans increased their traveling on highways up to 5% from the normal. In that time, roughly an estimated of 1,500 Americans died on the road trying to avoid the danger of flying. So here we have a situation where people react with a gut feeling. So there is this sudden attack and just not in a plane anymore. That's avoidance behavior. That's well documented in psychological research. And it may well be that this avoidance behavior once in human history was well adapted when we lived in small groups and the sudden death of a part of the group would threaten the entire group. That's a hypothesis. But today, this is no longer the case. And here we have a situation where a very emotional gut feeling killed an estimated 1,500 people.
Wow. I'm speaking with Timothy Wilson and Gerd Gigerenzer on today's Please Explain about Gut Feelings. And as always, we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. I'm Rosie Perez, in today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. We have to take a quick break, gentlemen, and we will be right back.
WNYC receives support from Incredible India, celebrating Visit India Year 2009, a variety of travel experiences for every reason and season in India's diverse culture and climates. Information at IncredibleIndia.org or at 800-953-9399. The Silver Palette, makers of marinara, vodka elegante, and other pasta sauces, made with whole tomatoes from the volcanic soil of San Marzano, Italy, blended with whole tomatoes from the fertile Central California Valley. No tomato paste used. Silver Palette. Dutton, publisher of This Is Where I Leave You by Jonathan Tropper. A dysfunctional family is reunited when forced to spend 7 days together following their father's funeral. This Is Where I Leave You, now available wherever books are sold.
Generation Y is yearning for the good old days, those of a decade ago when Harry Potter mania was just starting and music acts like Blink 182 and Creed ruled the airways. Today on Soundcheck, why 20-somethings are suddenly feeling nostalgic for their youth. Coming up at 2 on 93.9 FM WNYC. Hi. Hi, I'm Rosie Perez, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I am speaking with Timothy Wilson and Gerd Gigerenza on today's Please Explain About Gut Feelings. I want to go to a caller here. This is, please forgive me, Tony from Queens.
Tony?
Hello, Tony.
Hi, Rosie. I'm very impressed with your dexterity and the quality of your presentation today.
Thank you
for having me on. I've heard it said a long time ago that women have a greater sense of intuition than men, and I've even presented that in a comparative presentation that I've done due to the research that was out some years ago. And I just wanted to know, to what extent does our guest agree or disagree with that from his research?
Gert, I think you've written about that. You want to take that one?
Okay. So first, women believe that they do have better intuitions, that we know, but not in general. So I recently did a study here in Germany, 1,000 randomly drawn citizens, and when you ask them who has the better intuitions in about the right romantic partner, then there is almost no German man who thinks that men have the better intuition. So it's unanimously, women think they have better intuitions about a romantic partner, and men agree. They agree that I have little idea about that. But when the question is, who has better intuitions about science or about the stock market, then the picture reverses. So there are only 10% women who think that they have better intuitions. And again, both sides agree. Now, your question is probably, do these stereotypes, are they based on some reality? And although the research is not always showing the same picture, in general, there's little evidence for these stereotypes. We find in our studies on stock picking that women, on average, do slightly better than men. And that's a simple explanation, because they take less risks. And there are a number of studies which have looked at personal relationships. And typically one finds that men are about as doing as well. But still, the stereotype is there, and it's also reinforced by the media and by the way women and men are presented.
Hmm. Tim, since you did that study between relationships between men and women, did you find men and women are equally correct about their gut feelings about their relationships?
We did. I think consistent with the research that Gerd's talking about, we found that if you're trying to predict the outcome of a relationship, asking men and women just how they feel about it predicts equally well.
Hmm. I want to move on. There was last night I went and saw The Hurt Locker about the Iraq War and this specialty group of detecting bombs. And there was a New York Times article last month about how soldiers in combat rely on hunches, especially in detecting bombs. Are there certain people who have developed better instincts than others? In these cases, are the soldiers seeing things or hearing things without realizing it?
Yes, but again, it's not a sixth sense. For instance, I have studied experts such as police officers who try to detect drug couriers at the L.A. International Airport. And these officers can do this incredibly task of picking the one or two drug couriers out of hundreds and thousands who are passing through an airport. But how do they do it? So in one case, the officer told me that he has been walking through the L.A. airport for 10 years with an experienced officer. And that's how he picked it up. And it's not in language. The experienced officer never told him, look at this and that cue. But he told him, do you see this man over here? And the young, inexperienced said, yeah, which man? They're 20. So he learned by just watching. Until he acquired this skill, but it's an intuition. He knows that there's something wrong, but he can't explain it himself.
Hmm. We have a caller, Lydia from Flushing. She has a question. Lydia? Hello, Lydia.
To you. You're doing great.
Thank you, Lydia.
So my question is, if we take a president like George Bush, who was proud of his gut instinct and made many decisions based on his gut instinct, couldn't we take the gut instinct theory and carry it too far? And if I heard I heard them say before that you can overanalyze your gut instinct, but sometimes couldn't you be in situations where you should actually resist your gut instinct?
I would agree. I think that if it comes at the cost of gathering good information and not paying attention to that information, then I do think there is a danger. And let me give an example and it has to do with how people make hiring decisions. That most businesses and universities in hiring someone relies pretty heavily on a job interview where you might ask people questions, say, for an hour or so. And after that hour, most of us have pretty strong instincts and gut feelings as to whether this person is going to do well in the job or not. But the research shows that those feelings predict almost not at all how well the person will actually do, that the amount of information we can glean from a one-hour slice of someone's life really doesn't tell us much of anything about their future performance. And there's other indicators that are much better. And so that would be an example, I think, of where someone might have a very strong feeling, but it's based on bad data and should be ignored.
JC, thank you, Lydia, for your call. JC in Queens left a comment on our show page asking if gut feelings interact with biases and discrimination.
Well, I think, you know, I would put that in the category of a bad use of gut feelings. And again, I think what it all comes down to the kind of information they're based on. And if a gut feeling is coming from a prejudice or stereotype about somebody, that it is coming from purely on the basis of some superficial characteristic of a person, such as their race or gender, then surely that's the kind of gut feeling we should resist.
Gerd, in your study, especially with the police officers, isn't there also a terrible risk of racial prejudice coming through, especially with police profiling people?
Yes, and it's also a good example about how society resists their gut feelings. For instance, if the police officer stops a person or a car and detects illegal weapons or drugs, and the case comes to court, and the judge asks the police officer, why did you stop this person? And now, if the police officer honestly would say, I had a hunch, then that's not good enough. So according to American law, the police officer has to have reasons. As a consequence, and there's an obvious reason for that, that you mentioned discrimination, but that leads now that many police officers told me that they're just making up now reasons. And just to avoid that the trial goes down the hill. And it's another situation where I believe, and I had many discussions with judges in the U.S., I believe that at the end, what should count is not whether a person is able to give reasons, which is now according to law, but how good this police officer is, how often he gets the wrong guy and how often he gets the right guy. So it has to be the evidence, not the procedure.
We have a listener, Bill from New Rochelle. Hello, Bill.
Yeah, hi, Rosie. And I'd like to also second the previous comments about your performance and also to remind Herb Scannell and Laura Walker, the president and the CEO and of WNYC, to get more Rosie on the air. But my first point is to Gerd, and I think you've kind of been saying what I've always felt, is that intuition is observation. And
yes,
that's my hypothesis. And
yeah,
I know when I've had to make decisions, often it's based on time. You know, if you're talking about a relationship or a romantic thing, sometimes you have to make a snap decision, but it's not a final decision. And you know, you go with what you feel, which is what you picked up by your observations. Other times, if when I'm buying a car or making a major investment, I'll sit down like Benjamin Franklin, and as you said before, and write out the pluses and minuses, and you know, make charts even.
Yes. So there is one part of intuition, that is based on actual experience, but the point is the experience is not in language. So if you ask that person how she or he does what he does so well, then she cannot tell. But this is an important form of experience. And that ranges from composers who have this to chicken sexers to drug to police officers and also to scholars like us. So in my own research, I need both. I need to have a good intuition about the kind of questions to ask, but then I need to use methodology, so analytic thinking, to check it. And the question is never whether guts are better than deliberate thinking or vice versa, but the question is how to use both in a reasonable way.
Yeah, I would agree, Bill, and I think your car buying example is an interesting one because, you know, the way I do it is I first get very much in data gathering mode. So be analytical, you know, I read consumer reports, I look for information, I check gas mileage, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But in the end, I think you have to, if it comes down to a couple of alternatives and you're not too sure, then you can go with your gut. You know, you've narrowed it down to good choices. And now's the point where I just like this one. I can't tell you exactly why, but this is what I want.
Thank you for your call. Bill, I'm speaking with Timothy Wilson and Gerd Gigerenza on today's Please Explain About Gut Feelings. I'm Rosie Perez sitting in for Leonard Lopate. Tim, how do you distinguish between decisions based on gut instinct and in cases which we may make decisions based on social codes, learned behavior, and other subconscious factors out of our control? I mean, wouldn't that inform our gut reactions?
Well, yes. I mean, I think you're asking, tell me if this is true, that where... what's the basis of these gut feelings? And,
yes.
And they might be things that we don't necessarily want to pay, give a lot of weight to, such as social convention or I think the example that came up earlier of prejudices and stereotypes. I mean, these are things we want to, they might contribute to a gut feeling, but they're not necessarily something we want to be part of our decision. And I think this is one reason that can be hard, that we're not good at teasing apart these feelings and knowing exactly where they come from. And I guess I just fall back on what we said about just trying to make sure they're based on good information. So make sure that we have enough data about the decision we're trying to make that our unconscious has had a chance to extract from it what it can in a good way.
All right. We have a call from Pam from New Jersey. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Rosie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. My question is, have they done any studies or what are the experts' feelings on how early this gut feeling or intuition expresses itself? Is this something that young children possess? Do we label it something else? Or does it hit during puberty? Do you need a certain amount of experience in life? Or what are their feelings on that?
Gerd, you want to take this one?
To the degree... a good gut feeling is based on lots of experience, although unconscious. So it takes some time to grow up and to get these types of feelings. On the other hand, if you extend the term of gut feelings to things that are somehow coded evolutionary or genetically, then that would also include that we have a kind of equipment that makes sure that we're not steering off too far the way. So there are these kind of reflexive things, if you still want to call this a gut feeling. So you see the baby and you want that it opens its mouth. And so you, and many parents unconsciously, they don't even notice it, open their own mouth and elicit a very simple imitation strategy on the baby, so it opens also its mouth. Tim, have you done studies with children?
I haven't, actually, and I don't know of a whole lot of research here. I think there is a little bit of evidence that the stereotype about adolescence is true, that there's a certain impulsiveness in adolescence that that one's gut feelings can change radically from one moment to the next. And so anyone who's raised a teenager knows you don't necessarily want them to trust their what they think is their current gut feeling.
Yeah.
So I do think some experience can help here.
Okay, we have a caller from Jerry from Manhattan. Jerry?
Hello?
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Rosie. I am such a big fan of yours. I wish you would marry me. I just got to tell you very
Is that a gut
quickly,
feeling?
I have to thank you so much for something. I saw you in a music video last year, in a Monte Coppola video with Little Jackie. I had never heard of her before, but she is like the best thing since Prince. And I just owe you so much because I've got all her records since then. Thanks so much for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jerry. And what is your question? Because we're running a little bit out of time.
Yes, I'd like to ask the people there. I grew up going to church every week. And about 20 years ago when I was in church one time, my gut instinct just told me this is such bullshit.
Okay, I'm Rosie Perez and filling in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Timothy Wilson and Gerd Gigerenzer on today's Please Explain about gut feelings. And people, we are on the radio. Let's go to another caller. We're not going to go to another call. I'm so sorry about that. I just want to say thank you so much. It's so interesting because I'm a little bit more clear, but still a little bit confused. The last question I would like for either Tim or Gerd, is there any connection between phobias and gut instinct?
No, the one example I gave you about 9/11 and the anxiety that's being elicited.
Excuse me, Gerd. I am so sorry. That last caller threw me off. We have to go. On Monday's show, Leonard returns to speak with economist Henry Kaufman about how the financial crisis will reshape our economic behavior for years to come. Then, on our underappreciated summer reading series, we'll learn about Robert Montgomery Bird's novel, Shepherd Lee. Also, a look at how indie films can survive the recession. Plus, award-winning science journalist Poe Bronson explains why he thinks today's strategy for raising children are backfiring. I'm Rosie Perez, in for the Leonard Lopate Show.